first chapter, the first verse, the first section of the first chapter, chapter 1, is entitled Characteristics of Pure Devotional Service. And there are six characteristics listed. So, who knows what are the characteristics? What is one of the characteristics of pure devotional service?
Let's say it here.
It brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Let's see the first one, Richard. Second one?
Yes.
It's rarely acute. It is rarely acute. Two. What's another one?
Krishna consciousness is all auspicious.
It is all auspicious. It's all auspicious. It's the beginning of all auspiciousness. We read the Bhishtan book of fortune. Yes.
Really
means to attract Krishna. Yeah. Sri Krishna Karshini. The only means to attract one is Sri Krishna. That's four. And the last two are pretty much good devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure, and pure devotional service derives even the conception of liberation, which is similar to that one because it derives in the sense that it gives higher pleasure. So, I was instructed to begin with, we have gone through the first one, release from all material distress. Secondly, Krishna consciousness is all auspicious. Third, happiness and Krishna consciousness, these three words. And now, the rareness of pure devotional service. We'll begin by reading. What is the definition of pure devotional service? I don't even remember. Did you go over that? It has two apparent restrictions, or two apparent eliminates two things, right? Depends more or less on two things. Pure devotional service is? That's the verse. Ayabina Sita. Janakamara Lavita. Anukulaya Krishna Sivana Bhakta Uttama. Rupa Goswami gives that verse, and this verse is called, in Sanskrit it's called Paribhasa Sutra, which means there are many verses, and there are apparently some contradictions in hearing verses from various scriptures. But this verse establishes what is really pure devotional service, and that is, there's no conception of personal gain through activities, free from all activities, and personal gain by action. Also gain through philosophical speculation on scriptures. It has to be intended to please Krishna. It has to be for Krishna with the intention of pleasing Krishna. These are the characteristics. No desire for gains through future activities or philosophical speculation. The karmis, those who perform karma yoga, they perform some activity with a desire to achieve some result, and they give some or a good portion of that result as an offering to the Lord. But they perform the activity because they like to perform this activity. In other words, it's motivated by their own self-interest of giving it, offering some of the results to the Lord. That is considered unacceptable within the definition of pure devotional service. And then through philosophical gain, through speculation on various religious scriptures, with a desire to become free from the miseries of the material energy, Christianity's doctrine. We simply want liberation. We want freedom from material suffering. And also they render service to the Lord, but their desire is to achieve freedom from material suffering, or attain what is called the impersonal understanding of the Lord. To merge into the body of the Lord, to merge into the body of pulses of the Lord, in order to achieve the bliss and the happiness of liberation. So those things are considered to be what we say contaminations, because there is one personal motivation there. It has to be for Krishna and with a desire to please Krishna. Now, there are those who please Krishna unintentionally, and that is not considered pure devotional service. One has to perform an activity with Krishna in mind with a desire to offer that activity for the pleasure of the Lord. That is considered pure devotional service. An example of those who please Krishna, but do not intend to please Krishna, could be the demons. The demons also please Krishna because Krishna likes to fight. Propensity to fight is in the conditioned soul, in the soul also. Why? Because it's in Krishna. That's what we say, the spirit of competition. It's actually an innate quality, competitive nature. So it's coming from the Lord. The Lord comes to the material world to exhibit that competitive nature by destroying demons. And demons get pleasure by fighting with Krishna, but they don't get bhakti because they have no intention of pleasing Krishna. So that's an example of how Krishna is pleased, but there's no intention, so therefore bhakti is not given. Liberation is given, but not bhakti. So this verse, from Bhakti Vasudeva, the definition of pure devotional service, please keep that in mind. It's mentioned, I think, in the introduction, I think. It's this last. We can look it up. Okay, so we're on the third one, the rareness of pure devotional service. I'll read. In the preliminary phase of spiritual life, there are different kinds of austerities, penances, and similar classes for attaining self-realization. However, even if an executor of these practices is without any material desire, he still cannot achieve devotional service. And aspiring by oneself alone to achieve devotional service is also not very hopeful, because Krishna does not agree to award devotional service to merely anyone. Krishna can easily offer a person material happiness or even liberation, but he does not agree very easily to award a person engagement in devotional service. Devotional service can, in fact, be attained only through the mercy of a pure devotee. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is said, by the mercy of the spiritual master, who is a pure devotee, and by the mercy of Krishna, one can achieve the platform of devotional service. There is no other way. So Krishna invests his mercy, or the ability to receive his mercy through his bona fide representative, the spiritual master, the pure devotee. And by his mercy, which is Krishna's mercy, one can attain what we say devotional service, the platform of devotional service. In other words, it's a gift. It's bestowed upon one who is what we say serious. That is the qualification for practicing devotional service. One has to be sincere.
I think we don't need the microphone here.
I was just mentioning the verse. I think Prabhupada is actually referring to it. Like some of these Dhabin words in the English, Pishat Yunata, or Sadhuang Yunata. Mahi is some part of the Dhabin, you know, just kinship, and I'm not anything about it. Nonetheless, one is spoken by Balabharaj, who appears upon his body the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, who is completely free from the material contamination. Persons who are very much inclined towards materialistic life, they cannot engage in the devotional service of what Krishna has glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by engaging in devotional service and approaching the Lord in this way can one become free from material contamination. Prabhupada proposed that verse quite frequently. Prahlad Maharaj. This is Prahlad Maharaj's answer to Hiranyakashipu. And Hiranyakashipu, as we know, is a powerful demon, very great demon. He was first accusing Sandhanamaka, who was a teacher at the school. He was accusing them because Prahlad Maharaj was displaying such devotional qualities. And Hiranyakashipu was considered Lord Vishnu his enemy. And he sent Prahlad Maharaj to school to study under Sandhanamaka so that Prahlad Maharaj could learn about diplomacy, could learn about materialistic pursuits, and learning about all kinds of things that a king, a Samaya king, would wish the son to demonstrate or illustrate after his departure and apply after his departure. He was accusing Sandhanamaka that you are teaching my son, and I asked him, okay, tell me what you've learned. And this is what Prahlad Maharaj told him. He told him, I actually there were three verses. Whereas the three of them were, the first verse was Matirna Krishna Paratapatva Matobi Padita Vivhavatana Adanta Gobya Vijitam Samishan Punak Punas Javas Chavananam. He says that persons who are very much materialistically inclined towards material activities, what is that? Material Krishna.
You know, their endeavors for...
Yeah, they make progress towards hellish conditions of life and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. Their inclinations towards Krishna are never aroused either by their own efforts, by the efforts of others, or by a combination of both.
Yeah.
Right. He was describing the nature of materialistic persons. And he said that even by their own efforts, their inclinations towards Krishna are not aroused. Even when others make efforts to awaken them, they don't. Their position is they go down with hellish conditions of life and they chew that which has already been chewed. And the next verse he says, but save it is hard to continue Vishnu. But persons who are materially attached to sense enjoyment and have accepted as their leader a similarly materially attached man do not know that the goal of life is to engage in emotional service of the Lord and to please the Supreme Lord Vishnu. He says, as blind men led by another blind man miss the right path and fall into the ditch, similarly materially attached men led by another materially attached man, they're bound by the ropes of their own fruitive labor, which are made of very strong cords. Unless they undergo materialistic life, birth after birth after birth. So Prahlad Maharaj is answering. He's answering his father, Hiranyakashipu, in a very profound way. He's saying materialistic persons, what do? They're not inclined towards devotional service, and even if somebody tries to help them by their own efforts, or by the efforts of others, or combination of both, they lie down to a hellish life. And why? Because they've accepted materialistic persons as their leaders. This is the verse of the Bhagavatam also says, men who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses. They worship those people who are never interested in hearing about Krishna. Their ears are like the hole that the snake lives in. So that they're no better than a hole for the snake lives in. So Bhagavatam states that the persons who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, then what do? They glorify people who are better dogs, hogs, camels, and asses than they are. that they're not inclined towards devotional service. So, but for people who worship them, they accept materialistic, they have their materialistic leaders who pursue their materialistic goals. So they accept them, and then the example is given in the Bhagavatam. I said I didn't want to say much, but somehow I got off on this point. But the Bhagavatam is so powerful, you know, these examples, these verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, they're so detailed and descriptive. So, Prahlad Maharaj is explaining that they don't want to, I'll give an example in Krishna book, where it's described in the autumn season. The autumn season, sometimes the clouds will accumulate in the sky, and therefore the real luminaries in the sky cannot be seen. But people look up into the sky and they see glowworms in the trees, and they think they're the luminaries. Right? They're just glowworms in the trees, but because the sky is covered, they don't know that the real luminaries are what they are like. They can't see them because they're blinded by the cloud, presence of the clouds. So similarly, as Prabhupada explains in Kali Yuga, most materialistic people, they're like that. They don't see the real luminaries, right? Because they're covered by the cloud of illusion. They think these false materialistic leaders, they worship them, they glorify them. They think they're the real luminaries. So when a saintly person comes and speaks Hari Kata, and speaks about the topics of the Lord, they think, you know, what is this all about? What is this? No, they make no connection whatsoever. They have no relevance to their own existence. Because they're too busy and wrapped up in enjoyment of materialistic pursuits. So Prahlad Maharaj therefore says, first he says that they grant such materialistic persons, they glide down to a hellish condition in life, they chew that which has already been chewed. You know, that's a very easy analogy to understand the philosophy. Said, we've already chewed it before, it has no taste, but we'll try to chew it again. They accept materialistic persons and worship them. And therefore, Prahlad Maharaj told Narayana, what was his answer? How did he get like that? Because Sanda and Amarka, they were trying to get off the hook. They're saying, we didn't do this. We're not responsible. Please, don't hold us responsible. They were fearful. They were thinking Narayana Kashyapu was going to kill them. But Prahlad Maharaj made it very clear to his father, my son, but he started to look for money, speak in his own house, unless one spears upon his body, the dust of a lotus feet is a Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord. Persons who are very much inclined towards materialistic life, they cannot engage in devotional service. Who is glorified, and render service to the Supreme Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by rendering service to the Lord and worshipping the Lord in this way can one become free from material contamination. And that's the essence of what this paragraph is speaking about, is that there is no other way. You know, just as they oftentimes quote the verse, Harinam Harinam Yidakivanam, the Lord Nasyeva Nasyeva Nasyeva. There is no other way, no other way, no other way. Prabhupada says when you want to emphasize a point, you have to repeat it at least three times because people need to hear it again and again and again. Three times. So, the Prabhupada said that with respect to that verse. Therefore, one has to take the dust from the lotus feet of the devotee. That means taking their instructions, hear the glories of the holy name of the Lord from the lips of the pure devotees. And in this way, this is what Prahlad Maharaj is telling his father, Rani Kashyapu. This is how he got his contact. This is how he experienced his devotion. As Sundar and Amarka, in one sense, they were relieved that Prahlad Maharaj spilled the goods, you know, that he actually, at that point, Harani Kashyapu turned his attention, his fierce attention, which was directed towards Sanda and Amarka, the two teachers. He turned his anger away from them and then turned it against his own son. Of course, as soon as he did that, that was the beginning of his, you know, of his demise, of his end. Because that's how dear a pure devotee of the Lord is to the Lord. That one actually commits an offense to the pure devotees of the Lord will not tolerate it. And in fact, when the demigods, when they approach the Lord Vishnu, and with prayers, the Lord told them, do not worry, I'll take care of this wasp. And he tells them very clearly why. He tells them very clearly why. Because he is simply, he has become the enemy of my devotee for life. Just as Krishna told Duryodhana, he told Duryodhana, he says, you are my enemy. But Krishna has no enemies. Who can be Krishna's enemy? He says, but I consider you my enemy because you consider the Pandavas your enemy. The Pandavas are so dear to me that because you have become the enemy of the Pandavas, you are my enemy. This is the position the Lord takes against, with, I should say, his pure devotee. And therefore, such is the power of the pure devotee, and I think it's explained in this section that the pure devotee has the power to purchase the Supreme Lord by his purity.
That verse by spoken by Lord Vishnu to Devasamuni?
Yes. Go ahead, you quote.
No, you know.
I can't remember the Sanskrit. He said, I'm under the control of, I'm under the control of my pure devotee, and are all independent. Because the pure devotee always keeps, he renders service to me within the core of his heart, and he is not engaged in it, and has no fruitive desires. Even those who are devotees of my pure devotees, I consider them to be my devotees.
Mm-hmm.
So Krishna says, I am not independent, I am under their control. They have purchased me. I am completely under their control. And Krishna also tells Uddhava in the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the dust of the lotus feet of my pure devotees, I desire to purify this entire material world which is situated within me. And thus I always follow in the footsteps of my pure devotees. I take their dust, Krishna says. And what is their nature? They're always glorifying me. They're always equipoised. And they have no enemies. And they're always chanting my glory. He describes the characteristics, he says, by their dust, I'll purify the material world. And therefore, I follow in the footsteps of my pure devotee. Such is the power of the Lord, the pure devotee of the Lord. So that is the evidence that Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Prabhupada are giving in this verse about the power of pure devotional service.
And that takes us to the second reason why pure devotional service is very rare, as you mentioned, because only by pure devotional service can Krishna be purchased. Krishna is not, that's why he doesn't really give out pure devotional service, because to give out pure devotional service means to give himself. So, as Maharaj was saying, he, the Lord, actually becomes subservient to the dust of the pure devotee's devotion. Anything else, Maharaj?
No.
So that's the first point. The first point is that pure devotional service cannot be achieved by one's own efforts. But still, you have to make an effort. Because without making an effort, there's no indication of one's desire. But the effort alone is not the means for success. It is by the mercy of the pure devotees that the effort becomes successful. And how do we gauge whether we get the mercy? Again, one has to be sincere, that's all. So Nectar Devotion, it explains in one of the later chapters that the qualification for progress on the path of devotional service is simply the sincere desire to attain Krishna. And when the pure devotee sees that, then he gives his mercy. And when it's sincere. Okay, the rarity of devotional service is also confirmed in Tantra Shastra, where Lord Shiva says to Sati, my dear Sati, if one is a very fine philosopher, analyzing the different processes of knowledge, he can achieve liberation from the material entanglements. By performance of the ritualistic sacrifices recommended in the Vedas, one can be elevated to the platform of pious activity and therefore enjoy the material comforts of life to the full extent. But all such endeavors can hardly offer anyone devotional service to the Lord, not even if one tries for it by such processes for many, many thousands of births. So actually, it is explained that pure devotional service is rare, because generally people take the devotional service for some type of spiritual activity in order to achieve some kind of material result. That is generally the motivation. To improve one's material situation, to become known as a great executor of devotional practices, or what are some of the other motivations? To become free from material suffering. In other words, the motivation that generally the average person has coming to devotional service is something less than attainment of the goal of devotional service, which is to develop love for God. So the activities of materialistic society are generally of four. They're called the four purusharthas. That is, people perform pious activities in order to situate themselves better in some material situation, in order so they can use that material situation to enjoy sense gratification. And when that situation doesn't provide the sense gratification, the happiness they want, then they want liberation or freedom from material. So these are the four activities. It's called dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Pious activities, economic development, desire to satisfy the senses, and then ultimately liberation. But devotional service, the pure devotional service, is called the fifth purusharthas, and that is to develop one's love for God. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sarupa Vanoi Shravanadi Siddhi Chitti Keri Udar. In the hearts of all living entities, the nature of the living entity is to love the Lord. And until the Lord, till one comes to that platform of practicing a process to awaken that, one cannot be satisfied by any other achievement, either materially or spiritually. So this devotional service is the fulfillment of what we say all of one's desires. So here it's explained that people perform various activities in order to get better situations, either material or spiritual. But it doesn't satisfy the self. The self can only be satisfied. Savaipum samparo dhammo yato bhakti yahoksajaya hoitukhiya priyata yayatma sutrasivati. Explained in Srimad Bhagavatam by the sages of Nami Saranya, spoken by Sutta Goswami, that devotional service is when it's free from any personal desire and it's uninterrupted by any other activity, then it can satisfy the self like that. So this is pure devotional service. Maharaj, anything else?
No, let's go.
Okay. So I'll continue reading. If you'd like to ask questions or have something you would like to offer, yes, your two hands are already down.
I have a question. I was hearing the teaching of Lord Chaitanya in a narration. I'm about to give that narration. Amaravata and...
In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah. I was just hearing yesterday, and he said, I mean, the Prabhupada is saying this, to the devotees, they are offered to them the five kinds of the race,
mm-hmm.
and they just reject them.
They reject. Yeah.
And the Prabhupada said that, explaining that point, the true devotee is like a businessman that is so engaged in his activities, so busy engaged in the engagement of his activities that he doesn't even think about something else outside that. He's just busy at the very present moment. And he says also, Srila Prabhupada, that true devotees, they are so absorbed in their service at the present moment that they really don't think, never think about the next life or if they're going to go to the the kingdom of God on the earth.
Yes.
So this is my question now. An ordinary devotee, that is our good devotee, should he decide to go back to Godhead? Or he just has to try to develop the pure sentiments of just
service? Should be just concerned about rendering service, or should he desire to go back to Godhead?
I mean, this is my question. Should an ordinary devotee, he should be just thinking, I don't need to think about going back to Godhead. I just have to think, have to do some devotional service now.
So which is higher?
What is the main thing for the ordinary devotee?
One fully engaged in body, mind, and words in devotional service to the Lord is already liberated, or even while still within his body. Back to God then means to be fully engaged in devotional service. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. And anyone who's fully engaged in devotional service, you know, is as good as being back to Godhead. Because Krishna will take him home. And what does he do? And Prabhupada always gives the example that the same things that one does here, one does in the spiritual world, except that one is, the only difference is that one doesn't have a physical body. The physical body cannot enter the spiritual world. But still, for a pure devotee who's fully engaged in devotional service, he is back to Godhead. That's what it means to be back to Godhead. Krishna, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that anyone who's so fully engaged in service, and he takes him, personally takes him, and accepts him as an eternal associate of the Lord. So there is no difference. The desire to go back to God and the desire of pure devotional service are one and the same.
So if I want to go back to God, just with intention to get relief of materialization, that's different.
That's different.
But if I just want to go just to render service.
Of course.
Okay.
It's one and the same.
I understand. Okay.
Krishna takes anybody who fully engages in his devotional service back to Godhead. And that devotional service, I can't remember the Sanskrit for that verse, but basically the essence of that verse is that anyone who engages in his body, mind, and word is already liberated. And that liberation is not liberation of the impersonal liberation.
Through the Nicholas Yavya or something like that.
Nikola Bhakti Pasta Sujino Mukta Nuchi. I can't remember the beginning of it. Somehow it's just,
yeah,
it's part of the aging process.
It's not part of our philosophy.
But that's the essence of the verse. Anyone engages his body, mind, and words in devotional service of the Lord is already liberated even while within his body. He's liberated, but not in material liberation. His liberation is because he's fully engaged in devotional service, Krishna takes him back home, back to Godhead. In the same way as when Sāva Bhava Bhattacharya was trying to change the verse of the Bhagavatam from Mukti Padeh to Bhakti Padeh. You know, and that verse is Mukti Padeh Sadhaya Bhak. Somebody was just telling me recently, they would hear Giriraj Maharaj in that verse, that anyone who tolerates the reactions of this past sinful life and goes on rendering devotional service to the Supreme Lord and does never blame the Lord.
Tathena
kampam sisam ikshamano bhujana eva akitabha bhakam. Sāva Bhava Bhattacharya was, you know, trying to change it to the word Bhakti Padeh, but Lord Chaitanya says, oh, we cannot change the word to the Acharyas. The Mukti, this Mukti means Bhakti, means devotional service to the Lord. And Giriraj Maharaj was telling me something the other day, I think he was quoting Prabhupada saying, he says that if, just like a person, Dayavak means inheritance, right? If anybody wants to get an inheritance after his family dies, The only thing he has to do is he has to live.
Mm-hmm.
If that's all, you just have to live. As long as you live, the inheritance will come. It's there, it's left for you. So in the same way, devotional service will come. You know, I thought it was just such a wonderful analogy. You know, we just have to stay alive in devotional service to get our inheritance. But how do we get inheritance? What is living? We tolerate all kinds of sinful reactions due to the karma of our own past misdeeds, and go on glorifying the Lord and engaging in devotional service to the Lord. Then mukti kudesa daya bhakti. His inheritance of bhakti, of devotion, his inheritance of being fully engaged in devotional service is his rightful claim. That's how it's translated. It's his rightful claim.
Thank you. Question? One and the same. That was the conclusion. Question?
What does it mean to be sincere?
What does it mean to be sincere? By willing to do whatever is necessary in order to achieve the goal. If I'm sincere, but I'm still not willing to do what's required or what's asked of me or what's ordained by the process of devotional service, then that is an element of either a lack of faith, which is indication of what type of insincerity. So we shall want to be willing to execute the process as given by, and have faith that simply by following that. Another factor of insincerity is trying to create one's own way of doing things. It's too difficult this way, so I'll just make it a little bit easier. I don't have to follow the four regulative principles. I'm sincere, so even though I don't follow them, but because I'm sincere, Krishna will see my sincerity. So I mean, one can aspire, you know, to practice, even though one is not on that platform. But one has to do whatever is necessary to follow. Even if one cannot follow the four regulative principles, if one is trying their best and to come up to that standard, then that is sincerity. Sincerity means no duplicity. Sincerity means no hypocrisy. Sincerity means, you know, it's more like, you know, I understand what it means to practice, and I'm willing to do that. Even if I'm falling short of the standard of practice, still I'm willing to do whatever is necessary to come up to that standard. Yeah.
What would be the requirements to engage in fully devotional service?
What are the requirements? Aren't you going?
No, I'm back. I had to deal with that call.
Oh, okay. Thank you. You come back. I get given the microphone again. Funny because we both didn't have that phone. What does it mean to engage in full devotional service?
Are there any special requirements that you may have to follow these things to engage in full devotional service
to the Lord? Well, one of the requirements is one should take instructions from the Lord's representative. That's the first thing. Because devotional service cannot be figured out by one's own, you know, experiments or one's empirical understanding, one's abilities. One has to learn the science from one who knows the science. So that is probably the preliminary qualification. One should take guidance. That doesn't mean accepting initiation. That's second. Guidance means working under Krishna's representative. And by following that, then one will gradually develop the characteristics that are conducive to one's advancement. And what it takes to do that, and the qualification, is submissive oral reception.
Just as the mission oil, the mission inquirer with the desire to practice. I ask the question, I get the answer, I'm willing to carry it out. Okay?
Yeah.
Any other one? Questions? Should we continue reading or are there more questions? Okay, so we'll continue. So we're still on the first one, the randomness of pure devotional service. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is also confirmed by Prahlad Maharaj that merely by personal efforts or the instructions of higher authorities, one cannot attain to the stage of devotional service. One must become blessed by the dust of the lotus feet of the pure devotee who is completely free from the contamination of material desires. So that's what we just heard from Maharaj. He's explaining that same point. Prahlad Maharaj's statement that one's own individual efforts can only be successful when one takes shelter of the Lord's representative. In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, sixth chapter, verse 18, Narada also says to Yudhisthira, my dear king, it is Lord Krishna, known as Mukunda, who is the eternal protector of the Pandavas and the Yadus. He is also your spiritual master and instructor in every respect. He is the only for worship of God for you. He is very dear and affectionate, and he is the director of all your activities, both individual and familial. And what's more, he sometimes carries out your orders as if he were your messenger. My dear king, how very fortunate you are, because for others, all these favors given to you by the Supreme Lord would not even be dreamt of. So, here again, how the Lord becomes the servant of his devotee. This is the most wonderful thing about the Lord's quality. God has so many wonderful and outstanding and inconceivable qualities. But the one that's most amazing, and the one the Lord considers to be his most wonderful quality, is that he serves those who serve him purely. So, in this example here, King Yudhisthira was destined to rule the world, but he was challenged by Duryodhana, who was the other side of the family, and there was a war. Krishna took the side of Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira, the Pandavas, became successful. So Krishna acted in that capacity as their messenger, as their friend, as their advisor, as their menial servant. Because even after the war was over, when they were having the celebration of Rajasuya sacrifice, it is explained that different duties were given to different people for the ceremony, and one of the duties was to welcome the sages and saints to come who were coming to visit King Yudhisthira. And Krishna took the service of washing the feet of the saints and sages. So the Supreme Lord, who is the Lord of all, who is worshipped by all, who is the greatest of all, becomes the servant of those who become able to fully engage in devotional service. So God likes to serve those who are fully saved. So we don't really see that. It's hard to perceive by what we say how God is actually reciprocating with others. But for those who are fully absorbed in his devotional service with no other motivation, he becomes the personal servant. In other words, there's nothing they really have to do except, express themselves through their devotional love. When they love the Lord actually becomes, it becomes everything in their life for them. So the purport of this verse is that the Lord easily offers liberation, but he rarely agrees to offer a soul devotional service, because by devotional service, the Lord himself becomes purchased by the devotee. So Krishna gives himself, but he doesn't give himself that easily. He doesn't give himself that easily. To get Krishna, it's not that easy. But this is one of the qualifications to receive Krishna, that one must approach Krishna through Krishna's bona fide spiritual life. So devotional service is rare. So there's two points here that make up the rareness of devotional service. It cannot be gotten by simply by one's own efforts, and it is rarely achieved because to achieve it means to purchase the reward. So this is why it's rare. It's very rare. The Lord Chaitanya, who is Krishna himself coming in the form of his own devotee, has made the process easy. He's made that gift of pure devotional service easy simply to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If we become absorbed or attached to chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then through that process we can awaken that desire to serve the Lord pretty purely without any motivation. The Holy Name purifies the heart and awakens within us the desire to serve the Lord. And when that becomes mature, that is pure devotion. Any other comments, questions for this pure devotional service? Yes.
The pure devotees, they are very peaceful. But also the pure devotees.
What does it mean to be peaceful?
That's my question. So they don't have any material desire. They are very peaceful. And also they look very peaceful too.
Sometimes.
But also they have also a lot of anxiety because they want to preach and they want to do a lot of things. So I know that's spiritual anxiety, but I just want you to say something about that.
Spiritual anxiety as opposed to material anxiety?
Yes, because they are peaceful, but at the same time they are so eager to serve and...
That's compassion. Compassion is a feature of bhakti, which wants to reach out and give that mercy to others. So for themselves, there's no need, there's no want. But they know that this is the desire of the Lord, to share that and give it with others. And so they want to please the Lord, and they also want to show compassion to others by giving this mercy to others. So that apparent peacefulness is there. It's not apparent, it's there, but when it extends itself in the form of mercy, doya, to the conditioned soul, it can sometimes exhibit as transcendental anxiety. Because to give that mercy is not easy. Why? Because people come to the doctor and they ask for medicine, and then when you give the medicine, they say, give me a different medicine. So, generally, as we say, the majority of the conditioned souls don't want devotional service. They want some kind of happiness that's connected with some kind of spiritual practice. But devotional service is different. So there's an anxiety to give it up. An anxiety. How to do it in such a way that people will be attracted. They'll be able to take it up in some form or another. That desire. So they know it pleases Krishna. That's why it's transcendental anxiety. Now, what's the difference between transcendental anxiety and material anxiety? Transcendental anxiety brings you closer to Krishna, increases your emotional service. Material anxiety distances yourself away from Krishna and decreases your activity. Material anxiety leaves you unhappy, frustrated, and spiritual anxiety, it increases and brings you, what we say, closer to Krishna in the sense that you're making an effort to please Krishna. So one, even though it's anxiety, it's spiritual because it's meant to please Krishna. So if you try to please yourself, that's material anxiety. Try to please Krishna, that's spiritual anxiety.
Question on the same line. Spiritual anxiety, I don't know a stupid way to ask this question. Does it feel like material anxiety? Or is it pleasurable?
You're asking me? Does it feel good?
Yeah.
Sometimes. The question was, does spiritual anxiety feel good? And how is it experienced? There's two things. Yeah, it almost looks like it sometimes, it feels like material anxiety. In that there's, you know, apparently there's some effort, some hard work in there, apparently. But at the same time, there's a sense of satisfaction that comes in simultaneously. It's like a mother. A mother will try and do something to help the child, and the child is refusing. Okay. So for the benefit of the child, but the mother feels sometimes unhappy because the child's not accepting her mercy or her direction. Well, it can also be like that. It's the frustration of, you know, that one may experience when trying to give something to someone when someone doesn't take it. You know, Prabhupada was like that. He was always in anxiety. And no one could keep up with him, that's why. Because his anxiety was, he wanted to spread this movement, you know, to the whole world. And he was also, you know, in very elderly age. So he also was racing against time. So between his old age and his intense desire to bring that in Krishna consciousness to as many people as he could within the short period of time he had, He was constantly experiencing transcendental anxiety. And therefore, if the people were around Prabhupada, they were, you know, you had to try to understand that this was his mood. He wasn't going to waste any time. One of those transcendental anxiety doesn't waste a moment. No time for wasting. Okay. Should we continue on with the next one?
Yes.
What are you up to? We just finished the rarest and excellent, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. This is the first one. Okay. This is short. I'll read the whole thing. It's just like one long and one short paragraph. The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme Lord. Srila Rupa Goswami said that if Brahmanda, or the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied by 1 trillion-fold, it still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. In the Hari Bhakti Sudo Gaya Prabhupada Maharaj, while satisfying Lord Srinidhi by his spirit, says, "My dear Lord of the universe, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence and have become merged in the ocean of happiness. I now consider the happiness of Brahmanda to be more, no more than the water and the impression left by the cow's hoof of the earth, compared to this ocean of bliss." Similarly, it is confirmed in the Bhavartha Dipika, Srihari Swami's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. "My dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narrations of your pastimes certainly know ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Thus, a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than a straw in the street." So there's three kinds of happiness. Happiness that is found within the realm of material life. Happiness of liberation, as described here, and happiness that comes with pure devotional service. So each is progressively higher. And the happiness that comes with pure devotional service is like, it's like concentrated nectar. Might examine what is the there are different levels of sweetness. There are sugar, and then there's sugar, I guess, gore, and then what's that? Molasses and gore, and then higher than that is sugar cane, and then rock candy. Okay. The intensification of the sweetness of an object reaches its perfection. In devotional service like that, happiness is intensified. And one who is experiencing that, the mind cannot deviate into other areas when one is experiencing that. It's concentrated happiness. That means nothing else enters. No other thoughts, no other desires. So that is called Sandra Mananga Visheshatma, concentrated, thick, you know, nectar. That is the happiness of devotion. And compared to the happiness of liberation. Now the happiness of liberation, what is the happiness of liberation? It means the happiness of no more material suffering. One can be free from all material suffering, that is the happiness of Brahmananda. No, one is situated in the spiritual essence, experiencing the happiness within themselves. The soul is by nature joyful. So it's experiencing that happiness that is freedom from all suffering. And you might compare it to a sleep state. If you're a miserable person and you go to sleep, your miseries are not. You'll experience it while you're sleeping. But what is the happiness of that sleep? It's just a cessation of the miseries of being awake. But when you wake up, you have to experience that same misery again. So the happiness of Brahmananda is compared to that. That one attains that state of no material suffering, but then again, it's temporary. One has to glide back down and experience material suffering again. For pure devotional service, and the happiness comes from pure devotional service, is the happiness that is experienced in relationships to the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is the reservoir of all transcendental pleasure. And as we experience that relationship, we open up our own unlimited stock of transcendental pleasure. The jiva feels unlimited happiness in relationships to the world. But it cannot be changed compared to material happiness or the happiness of liberation. So these are a few statements here that illustrate that. Any questions on that? Happiness. Everyone likes the happiness, right? And is there anyone who wants to be miserable? Yes.
You talk about the eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And we talk about the different aspects of the absolute. And in Brahman, one experiences eternity in the Paramatma realization. So that's the end of the experience. The eternity and the knowledge. And then for Bhagavan realization, that eternity bliss and knowledge.
Right.
So then, where is the happiness in Brahman? If we're saying there's no bliss.
It's not complete. There's something there. The happiness is, as I mentioned, I use the example of sleep. Can you call going to sleep a type of happiness?
For them?
Yeah. Yeah, it is, because all of a sudden, all the misery that you have in your existence, of course, are, you become aware of that. But it's the happiness of being in a state of ignorance. So it's compared to that nature. It's not really happiness because it's more like a negative aspect. When you remove the negativity, it doesn't really, you know, take you into the positive. It just frees you from the negative. But because the soul is by nature blissful, it is experiencing some of its essence in that state. In other words, it's experiencing the happiness of no suffering. I mean, to have a material body means to suffer. So to have deeper mind realized means no more suffering due to the material contact. But it does, the pleasure of love is not there, which is the pleasure of the soul. To exchange love with the Supreme Lord, that's not there. It's just the happiness of being free from anxiety, suffering, stress. So when you bottom line realization means everything is complete. So in one sense, if you want to use your explanation, really, just for the sake of discussion, the word happiness is used. But compared to, as it says here, if the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme is multiplied by 1 trillion fold, it still cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of emotional sense. So, more or less, it's describing things in relationship. So really, the happiness of Brahman realization is insignificant. But compared to material happiness, so what is material happiness? Ah, here's another subject. What is material happiness? That we don't want to talk about. It. What is material happiness?
Temporary relief from suffering.
Yeah, that's pretty much the definition of it too. But you know, Prabhupada gives it that material happiness is society, friendship, and love, family life. The happiness of family life, whatever that means. But what comes along with that happiness is a lot of distress too. So, and it's temporary, and it's ultimately whatever little bit of satisfaction or pleasure one gets from that is lost within time. Lost within time. So one can one call that really happiness? Not really. So just for the sake of definition, it's compared to a drop of water in the desert. The soul wants unlimited happiness, and it gets one drop, and therefore, if one thinks that one drop can satisfy a thirsty person, then that's the problem. And then again, that drop is gone after some time. It's just that the conditioned soul is so unaware of its own nature that it can't conceive of what is the limit of one's happiness. We don't actually know what it means to be happy or to experience the happiness of our own nature. So we accept these temporary things as happiness, but really from in proportion to what is our nature, they're not considered even to be happiness. So they say material suffering, something that is a little bit better than material suffering, that's called material happiness. The real happiness is the relationship, the soul's connection with the Supreme Lord in devotional service. That's where pleasure begins. Hare Krishna, you're laughing. You're crying or not?
No.
I'm thinking you were crying also.
No.
Okay. Should we go to the last one? It's pretty long.
Did you finish this one?
Pretty much. The happiness of becoming one with the Supreme compared to the happiness of the emotional self.
You read it all?
Yeah, that was just 2 paragraphs.
Probably the large one.
Hmm?
I think we should have argued that.
Any more questions? Characteristics of pure emotional sense. This book, I think it's important to emphasize the importance of studying this. This is a handbook for practicing devotional service successfully. It's like if you get a machine, they always give you a guidebook on how to operate the machine effectively. So this is called the handbook for the science of devotional service. And it's easily explained. The first 19 chapters make up what is called the first wave, four waves. One studies the first 19 chapters. These first 19 chapters are sufficient for developing their emotional
service. The name of the book is The Nature of Devotion.
Yeah. Okay. Sanskrit is Bhakti Vasamati Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. Complete Science of Bhakti. Anything else before we start? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.